everybody, welcome to Magic the Amateuring, the podcast where Maria and Megan dress like twins.
That's right. If you're not watching the video, that statement makes little sense unless you already assumed that we dressed identically all of the time.
I would assume that, you know,
just listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, two people are friends, do a podcast together, both play magic, mm-hmm. dress exactly the same.
Yep.
It's the story of so many friendships.
Indeed. Well, if you watch the video over on Tolarian Community College this week on YouTube, you will see the wonderful matching outfits Megan and I chose completely by accident. Welcome to the show. This is a podcast for anybody who plays Magic the Gathering. New players, old players, dead players, players yet to be born, still in the womb, put headphones on your belly and have your baby listen to us.
Players who forgot that they played, remembered that they played some, forgot again, and will later remember more.
Yeah, just everybody.
Really, everybody.
I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm another one of your hosts, Maria.
What?
JK, this is Megan.
Oh my god, I looked at you and I thought it was a mirror. I thought it was
that person is wearing the same outfit as me. It must be
me. It must be me.
I've thought that many times in my life.
What? Explain yourself.
What? You know, I've looked at lots of people and been like,
"Oh, that's
not me." That's me.
To be honest, I've looked at people and thought that's Megan, but it wasn't. But it was not you. Because you were sitting next to me in a car, but I'd see somebody like outside of the car, or we'd be walking together and we'd see basically a Megan. And I'm like, check out that knockoff Megan. Somebody got a, you know.
At the Savers.
Yeah. I mean, every Megan who's not a, you know, legitimate Megan is a knockoff Megan.
Aw, thank you.
You're welcome.
Like to think that I'm the original full price me.
On today's show, we're going to be talking about Standard, because we had our first event this weekend.
That's right. This past weekend
with Shadows Over Innistrad Legal.
So there will be a Standard corner.
It came of age.
We'll also be talking about a Shadows Over Innistrad GPT that I went to this past weekend, and a For the Noobs that arose out of experiences at that GPT.
I'm having noob moments still all the time, and I've been playing this game for 3.5 years.
Exactly. It goes to show that you never age out of noobing.
That's true. I think maybe I've talked about this on the show. I can't remember. I told somebody once that we had a segment called For the Noobs, and they were like offended by that.
What?
Because calling somebody a noob, you know, online is like really bad.
They're like, oh, such a noob.
And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, aren't we all just like noobs, really?
We are.
Most of us.
We are all noobs until we die.
I mean, we're all still trying. We're learning things in this game of life.
Yeah.
My dad is an aged gentleman, and he's still a noob at many things.
Yes.
Including, like, the internet, for example.
Well.
He likes to download viruses, you guys. Then I gotta fix it.
He likes to.
I mean,
at this point. Look at this.
I'm like, I think you do at this point, pops.
Oh man, so this is a weird tangent, but at work, part of what I have to do is I monitor all of our titles for copyright infringement, and for the most part, that just means that I have Google alerts set up for their titles.
God bless Google alerts.
So I get, you know, I get all of these Google alerts if the name pops up, and if it's something suspicious, before I send it over to legal, I have to click on it, and every time I'm just like, well, here's like the roulette of am I putting a virus on my computer?
Boop. Have you found any copyright infringement?
Oh, tons.
That's crazy.
Oh, it's super weird, too. You can tell that it goes in, like when a new site is up, because a whole bunch of them will pop up at once.
Oh, like so people can download the book?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Tons of illegal downloads.
I thought it was people writing the same book.
Oh, no.
Again.
I'm talking about just illegal downloads of the book.
Aren't all books really the same book? You know what I mean?
I'm talking about the Bible?
Isn't that something
that people say about the Bible?
Is it? It sounds like a Bible-y thing to say.
Isn't it like all books are secretly the Bible? That's not the saying that I'm thinking
I've
of.
Definitely read some books that were not the Bible, if you know what I mean.
I'm pretty sure there's a saying about the Bible.
There's probably one.
There's at least one.
Before we get into the show, I want to quickly mention Patreon. Go to patreon.com/mtacast and you too can be a supporter of the show. throw a dollar in there, throw two. Or if you're a high roller, throw 10. We got some high rollers in there. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Props to those rich people. You can get sweet rewards and push us up towards our next goal, which we're getting closer and closer to every day. So thank you to everybody who's a member. We really, really appreciate it. You can also go to our website, magicallyaventuring.com, because our playmats have been selling like hotcakes, Megan.
That's right. Get your hands on one before we never buy any more of them.
That's a good point. They're not cheap.
That's a real threat, you guys.
It's a real threat.
After we sell out of these ones, we don't know, when we'll order. Do. We will, you know, someday in the future order more, but we're not promising it's going to be right away.
So you can say...
Because we had to order special boxes that we assemble by hand.
Yeah.
So
we're in Mishra's workshop down there.
Yeah,
we putting really those are. Suckers together,
assembling contraptions, you might say.
Oh, interesting. We'll sign them for you.
Riggers.
If you put a little note in there, do beep beep boop boop, Mary Meg, please sign my playmat. Somebody wanted us to write a joke on his playmat too, so we got to think of some
just
jokes.
The word joke.
I mean, if you want to be a dick about it.
The way you said I heard you say somebody wanted us to write joke on his playmat. Just write the word joke.
Joke. No.
That would be hilarious. In its own way, that would be a joke.
It would.
But it would be one that only he would get.
A sweet troll, if you will.
Yes. Hey, everybody. It's time for Standard Corner.
It's just a standard corner.
It's just an average run-of-the-mill corner.
You can see one anywhere.
Yep.
That has corners.
Mm-hmm. So there was an SCG open in Baltimore this past weekend.
Baltimore, city of...
Orioles.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Which I believe is a type of bird.
It is.
But I wouldn't swear to it.
Yes.
Oh, good.
A little orange and black bird. They're kind of cute.
That is super cute. So there was an SCG open in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And it was standard. So we got to see lots of new, fascinating standard brews. And by that, I mean Bant Company 1.
Yep. Boring alert.
Well, it was playing some new cards, which I am super interested in.
What one are you most likely to call on a date?
Which of these creatures?
The new ones, yeah.
Okay, wait. Go, let me see Duskwatch Recruiter, which is one of the new creatures.
Oh, yeah.
This is the one that it is one and a green for a 2/2 human warrior werewolf. And for 2 and a green, you can look at the top 3 cards of your library, reveal a creature from among them, and put that creature into your hand. When it flips into a 3/3 werewolf, you get to pay one generic less for each of your creatures. It also is playing Tireless Tracker, 2 copies of Tireless Tracker, which is 2 and a green for a 3/2 rare that says whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, investigate, and whenever you sacrifice a clue, put a +1/+1 counter on Tireless Tracker.
These cards are just good.
Yeah, so Tireless Tracker is a card drawing engine, which you don't usually get in, you know, very creature heavy decks. This deck also run Jace Vryn's Prodigy, which, you know, is a way to draw. But Tireless Tracker is interesting that it provides yet another way to draw cards and get some late game card advantage going on if you really need to.
So you're not generating clues. You're just generating clues when you play lands. There's no other card in here that's making clues.
No, it is just the Tireless Tracker that is making clues. And then... the Duskwatch Recruiter is nice because it kind of does the same thing on its front side where you have a ton of creatures in this deck, so you're likely often going to hit a creature off of these 3. So it's essentially a way to draw
27
creatures. And then on its flip side, it lets you play those for a lot cheaper. It's also playing 2 Archangel Avacyns.
Yeah, man.
Which is also pretty sweet.
I mean, if you're not playing Avacyn, I mean, some decks the color's not right, but if your colors, I'm kind of like, what are you doing?
Yeah. No, like, if you're playing white, why are you not playing Avacyn?
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you?
I think second place was not playing Avacyn.
What? And they were playing white.
Yeah.
Whew. Boy, oh boy. Interesting. So, yeah. Bant Company, you know, these creatures, also a lot of them took the place of, for instance, there are no copies of Deathmiss Raptor in this one, because the mana did get worse for three color decks. Now that fetch lands are goodbye'd, we goodbye'd them. Shut up. That's a sentence. That's a word. It's a phrase. It's a thing we say.
I mean, there's bounding crisis in here and Avacyn, so like.
Yes, but Deathmist Raptor specifically was a one green. So Deathmist had double green requirements.
But Avacyn, three white, they're like worse.
Yeah. I mean, you know. Yeah. You know, what is a velociraptor to an angel?
True.
So anyways, pretty sweet, yeah. Obviously. And I would say of those three, obviously Avacyn.
Yeah, for sure, you know, Avacyn.
There's something to be said for knowing that someone is going to go crazy when you start dating them.
So you know when to get out?
I'm just saying that it's like, right, with everyone, it's just like, are they secretly a serial killer? I don't know. With Avacyn, you're like, you know. What? Yes, 100% of the time.
You're really 100%. Going in low as you're like, what? No, okay. Expectations. You could have murdered 20 people.
How long after you meet someone do you stop thinking that they could possibly be a serial killer?
Oh, no. I meet somebody, and then after I've known them, I start to think they could be a serial killer.
Really? Yes. Really?
It's definitely not when I first meet them. I'm like, oh, everybody's great. And then I'm like, wait a second.
I definitely start off assuming that everyone's a serial killer. And then I'm like, okay, how long do I have to know you before I stop believing this about you? And it varies from person to person.
You need to gather evidence.
Yeah.
See how interested in knives they are,
yeah,
at any
exactly.
given time.
Yeah. You know, or just like what kind of vibe they're giving off.
Yeah. I mean, I think a serial killer, like they give off like a good vibe. You don't.
Yeah.
Think
right.
It's
they're,
them.
They're supposed to be very charismatic,
mm-hmm.
Which is
scary. Scary.
Well, moving
anyway,
on.
Mono white humans got second.
Yes.
And this is one that's not playing Avacyn. It's playing creatures Ooh. Like Remember Me, Consul's Lieutenant.
Yeah.
I didn't. It has renown.
This was a really fun draft card from
it
Origins.
Was.
You really wanted to draft this card if you were playing a heavy white deck.
But I seriously completely forgot about it. I'm like, renown? What is that? Mm. Oh, yeah. You can put a counter on it if it deals damage. So this
yeah.
is one that's white for a 2/1 first striker with renown 1.
And it buffs all your other dudes if it's renowned.
Yeah, pretty
which
sweet.
Is pretty great.
It's playing cards like Dragon Hunter, the 1-mana 2/1 that can block dragons.
Sure.
Expedition Envoy.
Sure, why not?
Another 1-mana 2/1. But this is the card that's, I think, probably... I mean, one of the all-stars of the deck is Hanweir, Militia Captain.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the new guys. One in a... Or should I say gals? One in a... I can't tell.
I think it's a girl.
Okay. One in a white for 2/2. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you control 4 more creatures, transform it and transforms into a star-star based on how many creatures you have.
Mm-hmm.
And it can like pump out more dudes. It
yep.
just pumps them out for free.
Pretty
Boom.
Sweet. Knight of the White Orchid, Thalia's Lieutenant, which both buffs other creatures and then creatures buff it. This very mutual buffing
yeah, a lot
situation
of buffing going on.
Yeah, four copies.
Thraben Inspector.
4 copies.
I mean,
of our friend Thraben Inspector.
Sometimes
like,
you just
beautiful.
Gotta inspect, you know.
I mean, you need to get all the clues.
One thing that this deck is very good at, it has 28 creatures, even more
mm-hmm.
than Bant. Westvale Abbey is playing
one copy of Westvale Abbey. Pretty sweet.
I love it. There's 2 more in the sideboard, but
yes.
let's make some demons, am I right?
One of my favorite photos from the weekend, which was posted on Reddit, was like of someone's deck that was green-white tokens, and like on the battlefield there was a transformed Avacyn, which is red,
yeah.
and a transformed Westvale Abbey, which is black. So
it's
like green-white tokens, and there was a red and a black creature on the battlefield. It was like, yep, sure.
Guess what this deck's playing 3 of?
Oh my god, Griff's Boon.
Griff's Boon.
Hey, Griff.
That's the one white, just mm-hmm. white, sorry, enchantment aura. Gets 1/+1/+1 flying, 3 and a white. You can return it to the battlefield from the graveyard, attach target creature as a sorcery.
Sure. Also playing 4 copies of our friend Declaration in Stone. Nice exiling spell.
Yeah, this kind of neat. Like, this is the kind of deck that I'm like, ooh, I want to try this because it's neat with all the... They all pump each other. There's 3 always watching in here.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, I'm interested.
Yeah.
Color
I mean,
me interested.
I can see you playing this.
But if you want to get a little more probably powerful...
And sweet.
This deck is
This is the
crazy.
One in the top 8 that I'm very excited about.
How can
I'm
anybody not love this
so
deck?
So happy it's here.
Thing in the Ice.
Thing in the Ice. Blue-red control. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so obviously this is playing 4 Thing in the Ice because give me a break. We got 4 Jace and we've got 2
Literally,
Jorian.
Give you a break.
Rune Diver.
A break in the ice.
Yes. And Chandra, which is good.
Of course.
You need
if
Chandra.
If you're not playing Avacyn, you should be playing Chandra.
But here's the thing.
And if you're not playing red-white, then you're playing other colors.
Very
sure.
good.
Sure, let's keep talking. Moving on.
Here's the thing about Chandra in this deck. She comes with something and is a very important piece of this deck. She comes with her goggles.
Oh my goodness, that's right. I was so surprised by this, but like three copies of Pyromancer's goggles.
Yeah.
For those of you who are like, what? Legendary artifact, mythic from Origins, 5 mana.
Yeah.
Tap.
Not cheap.
Add red to your mana pool. What a, you know, what
okay.
a ramp.
Ramp.
When, JK, you guys. When that mana is spent to cast a red instant or sorcery spell, copy that spell and you may choose new targets for the copy.
I should correct myself. I think these are Jaya's. How do you say her name?
Jaya Ballard's.
Yeah.
These yeah, are that's
her true. Goggles. But anyway, yeah. The reason the card's in this deck is because this deck, we also play cards like Fiery Temper in here.
Yeah.
More notably, probably, Fall of the Titans.
Oh my goodness. There's a Lightning Axe.
Yep.
There is Pyromancer, we already said that, Magmatic Insight and Tormenting Voice. Ooh, to draw some cards?
Yeah.
Nice. So yeah.
It's just pretty sick.
It is. It is very cool. And it got fourth, so that is also super sick.
Yeah, so yeah, everybody's been talking about Thing in the Ice. What is the deck that's going to play Thing in the Ice? What's it going to look like? And this is pretty close to a deck list that I put up in Daily MTG, which plays Jory N, which is a real question that I had, if the deck's going to want Jory N.
Yeah, well, this one plays 2 copies.
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool.
Draw the cards. Draw all the cards.
Because whenever you cast your second spell each turn, you can draw a card. And do you see the synergy with those goggles? Do you see it? Do you see the synergy? It's right there in front of your face. Nice. We still got decks that are playing white black Eldrazi. That's still happening.
Yeah, sweet. It plays an Eldrazi Displacer.
Hedron Crawler. Three Hedron Crawlers.
Yeah, man. Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Four Avacyns because they're playing white.
Yep.
So you got to get them in there. Some Gideons, some Sorin.
They're Sorin.
Yeah, man. What a bro.
Yeah, he's broing out in this deck.
He really is.
It's really not that Eldrazi. I guess it is kind of Eldrazi.
It seems to me very, it's very mid-range. Like, it has some very powerful, you know, early stuff. Knight of the White Orchid, Mattery Shaper, Thought Not Seer. Honestly, even especially with Hedron Crawlers, if you're playing, like, a turn 3 Thought Not Seer, that is fairly aggressive.
Yeah.
but it also has some staying power in Sorin Grim Nemesis. Even, honestly, in stuff like Eldrazi Displacer.
Yeah.
Once you have a ton of colorless mana in play, you can start tapping their entire teams.
Goodbye.
Yup.
So here's an interesting deck, which it was not in the top 8 or anything like that, but I just want to call it out because it's very strange. It's got 33rd place, and it's Esper Demonic Pact.
Yeah.
So this deck plays only 3 copies of the same creature. What creature, you ask? Wasteland
what
Strangler.
Wow.
Yep. And 1 Sorin.
Color me surprised.
And everything else is a spell.
It only plays 1 Sorin?
Yeah.
Impressive.
Deadweight, Demonic Pact, 4. Duh. Silk Wrap, Sinister Concoction.
Wait, go back
cool.
to Sinister Concoction?
Yeah, one of.
Wow. All right.
Starfield of Nyx, 4. Stasis
what?
Snare.
Go back to Starfield of Nyx. It plays Starfield of Nyx.
Yeah.
This is a 4 and a white, a legendary, or a mythic enchantment, not legendary, but at the beginning of your upkeep, you may return target enchantment card from your graveyard to the battlefield. As long as you control 5 or more enchantments, each other non-aura enchantment you control is a creature in addition to its other types and has power and toughness equal to its converted mana cost.
So what are you doing? Are you trying to kill your demonic pact?
Well, you have to kill your own demonic pact.
So you're
pact.
Killing your own demonic pact
or
and
you're
then you're getting it.
You're dispersing it. Disperse. You're dispersing it. Your Silumgar's commanding it.
We have
you can
Stasis Snare.
This deck plays 2 angelic purges. Which you can use, you know, if you play an angelic purge, you can sacrifice your own demonic pact as part of the price. Pretty sweet, man.
Wow.
This is a very, very interesting.
This is spicy. That's really
spicy
cool.
Spicy indeed. So demonic pact, especially when you're able to recur it with Starfield, is something that you can kill your opponent with because one of the modes is dealing 4 damage to target creature or player.
Yep.
So you're going to burn them out with demonic packs.
This is so crazy. I bet people just did not see this coming.
Yeah, I mean, there have been versions of demonic pact control lists for a while. They've always been something that people are fiddling with since that card has been around. But it's always fun to see one.
Yeah, know. That's kind of cool.
Exactly. Speaking of Esper, let's go back to that list and take a quick look, because I would say going into this weekend, there were, you know, decks that people expected or hoped to see. You know, everyone
like
thought.
White blue humans, people thought, for sure.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like Bant Company, even everyone's like, Esper okay, Dragons. It's not losing a ton. So yeah, Esper Dragons got 15th, which is interesting to note. People were saying with Crackling Doom leaving, maybe we'll see a resurgence of things like Esper Dragons, which was weak to the card Crackling Doom. So yeah, here it is at 15th.
Yeah, they've got 4 Dragonlord Ojutai, 2 Dragonlord Silumgar, 4 Jacevin's Prodigy, and then we have Obnixilus Reignited and 1 Sorin.
Nice, and then it also comes with, you know, a whole suite of removal and counter spells.
Yeah, so classic kind of control and then playing your big dudes.
Yep, absolutely. And then is there any, do you know if there was a non-dragons version of Esper control?
Non-dragons. Mm-hmm.
They were all pretty.
I see a lot of humans, but there's dragons in this white blue humans that got 6.
Interesting. So the humans are making a comeback.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes.
Although they're under attack on Innistrad.
We have a Jundi deck getting 22nd.
Nice. Maybe they'll make it.
Salty Delirium. Cool. That's kind of neat.
Well, let's see it.
41st.
Sweet. Hangerback Walker, Deathmiss Raptor, Den Protector. So lots of ways to get things back.
Mind-wreck Demon.
Excellent. This is cool. The 4/5 flyer for 4 that with flying and trample. And unless you have Delirium, you lose 4 life during your upkeep.
Oh my god, I love it. There's also Gitrog Monster.
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Nice, and it plays, you know, lots of kill spells and counter spells. That's pretty cool.
So yeah, this is kind of everybody's first time to see a lot of competition with these decks and kind of get a feel for where the format may lead them. And the Pro Tour usually ends up being kind of the deciding vote on what decks are going to lead the pack for a while and what other ones are going to fall off the cart. Notably, what we don't see here, Megan, just going to point it out, is Red-Black Vampires.
Maria.
God bless America.
Let go of the dream, friend.
I can't.
Let the dream fly.
I'm a Rakdos player, and I've never had a Rakdos deck.
Maria, there are other ways to be aggressive.
That's a good point.
You know, just be white in the color pie and be aggressively judgmental.
That's white's arena, being Judgy McJudgerson.
That's what they do. They're all like the lawmakers. You know, they're very righteous.
I get it. Yeah, I mean,
lots of very genuinely good people.
The humans deck seem kind of in that vein. So maybe that'll be my piece of the pie.
Exactly.
This standard season.
I have yet to choose my part of the pie.
Aren't you just gonna play Bant Company?
I really love Bant Coco. I would really love to. You know, I'm not necessarily saying goodbye yet to the idea of playing Blue Red Prowess or Red Thing in the Ice.
That
or
would
the
be
blue red control.
Sick. Oh, that would be so fun to play Thing in the Ice.
You know, I'm gonna wait until a Pro Tour until I make my call, man.
All right.
For the noobs.
In-game communication.
You guys, communication is an important part of life.
It is, just in general.
Yeah, you need to communicate with people on a daily basis.
You can even major in it in college.
Yeah, you absolutely can. Which is such a weird general term.
Communications. Like, I'm gonna learn how to talk to you with you.
I mean, that's a legit skill.
Do you know that in Wales, in Welsh, you talk with someone, you never talk to them?
Aww.
Isn't that cute?
That is so delightfully pleasant.
Yes, I mean, there are delightfully pleasant people. To the point of where they keep getting invaded. I mean, not anymore. Well, kind of, anyway.
Look, no one is invading to them. They're invading with them.
Yeah. Let's not get political, Bartholdi. All right.
Anyways.
Yeah, communication. In magic, it is no less important than in life or in a relationship.
Absolutely. To communicate.
So something that I think is an important skill is learning to communicate effectively and correctly and legally while playing a game of magic.
Yes.
It's absolutely kind of a complicated issue, though, because it's sort of like an opinion thing sometimes, mm-hmm, on, you know, kind of what you want to do, what you feel comfortable, how you feel comfortable playing versus your opponent, mm-hmm, and how the judges who are there overseeing the match or overseeing the tournament feel like they should rule if there's any communication type questions that come up. Because Magic, we're not playing Magic Online here. There's humans involved. Yep. I mean, there's humans involved in Magic Online, too. But
I just let a robot play my Magic account.
That's weird. Sit down, B3108.
You're a robot.
Go I will cast cryptic command.
Good job, robot.
But I'll only choose one mode.
What? You can't. You legally can't.
But I want to.
You legally can't, robot.
Okay. Powering down.
God damn it.
That we robot play, was so weird.
We can't play standard or modern right now because our robots are really having issues with like multi choosing.
Because like they have to choose. They have options. To make, they look at a list and they have to make a decision. And the best decision, yeah, they probably get caught in like a decision loop.
Oh man.
Do you ever feel like that?
Yeah. Oh, someone was at, so, like, I remember this is a discussion on Twitter, like not that long ago, of like in regards to, so you know how there are computers that can beat chess players.
Yeah.
Because there's sort of like a, basically there's like a database of moves, exactly, and like the best response moves to certain moves. Someone was basically starting the discussion of like, do you think robots
could play Magic,
would be able to beat the best Magic players? Like how, like what do you think is the maximum limit on a robot's ability to play Magic?
Well, you, first of all, you would have to keep inputting data into this robot.
That's true.
Because of all the new sets. I don't think you could put it in fast enough and have it like, because the
synthesize all that information.
The number of games you would have to put in for the robot to make the correct decision would be quite a high number of games. And by then the format would probably be done. So like, yeah, you maybe you could play an old format versus a robot and have them make, oh gosh, I think, yeah, it would be really, oh boy,
like
I don't know.
Like you could program it, say, like what if you programmed it just for a standard season? It's like, okay, we're going to program it just for, let's say, the environment of this upcoming Pro Tour.
Yeah.
You would program it just for that.
And then, like, just say you have all the data you need. Like, somehow you've collected the every single play of every single game. Like,
could you do that?
And the outcome.
Because yeah. Because think of how many, like, oh, there's just so many more pieces. Even in just one season, there's so many more pieces than there are in chess.
Oh, yeah. I think it'd be way harder than chess. Way harder. Is it, like, could you technically do it?
And how long would it take you to do it? Like, would it take you literally years to program this robot?
Yes, I think so. And, like, two, the robot would still make wrong decisions because a lot of the decisions that are made at higher level play sometimes aren't about what cards we see on the playing field, but about, yep, what cards you assume your opponent has in their hand.
I believe that you could teach a robot that. I think you could teach a robot to make guesses,
yeah,
about what your opponent has. They would never be able to read anything like bluffing.
Right.
Or like, God, I mean, like they could, like they, right, they would be able to probably like read if their opponent has the opportunity to have a combat trick.
And then they don't play it. That's a whole nother level of robot.
Holy crap.
This robot's getting very complicated.
We really got into a tangent with this.
Megan, I love robots. I could talk about robots all day.
Oh, this is super interesting. I'm way farther into robotics than I ever thought I would venture. Robotic theory.
Follow my Instagram.
I definitely do not have the
robot
qualifications.
A day. I post a robot a day.
I know you do.
Anyway, yeah, so, man, great question, though.
Okay, so we were talking about communication,
what were
we talking though.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so part of the story is that I went to a Grand Prix trial, Shadows over Innistrad Sealed this
and
past weekend.
And what do
weekend.
You get for going to a Grand Prix trial?
If you win a Grand Prix trial, you get two buys at the Grand Prix that the Grand Prix trial is for.
In is that case, it?
For
do you get
GP
anything
Minneapolis.
Else?
I mean, there's like the store does other prizes.
Okay.
Right? So there's like packs or whatever that
I
also
want
come
a wreath
with it.
Of laurels.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay.
So, anyways, but that's right. People are mostly playing for two buys.
Yeah.
And usually it comes like with also like registration. And I think Sleep In Special.
Oh, that's cool.
It depends on the GPT and the GP, maybe, but a lot of them. I know, like, the ones that you do at the venue, the night, like, a lot of venues have them, right, Friday
right.
night. There's lots mm-hmm. of GPTs. Those always come with, like, I think two buys
oh,
and
cool.
Sleep In Special
okay.
registration. Anyways, moving on.
You're playing Sealed.
We're playing Sealed. And I think my deck was, like, okay, not great. I had a lot of, like, I had a really tough decision. Like, I definitely wanted to play white because I had some good removal in white. And I had some strong cards. Like, I had an Audric, and I had a lot of, like, ways to make spirits and that sort of thing. And I had Declaration in stone, so I had some good removal. But then I was either going black, like, white, black, splash, green for a Gitrog monster.
Oh, sick! I always play the Gitrog!
Or, but I also had blue, which had a Nephalia Moondrakes, which is the 5/5 flyer that gives another creature flying, or exile it to give all of them flying from your graveyard. And I had a Giralf's Masterpiece.
Yeah, you probably play blue then.
So I ended up playing blue. And like some interactive stuff. And like it just had a nicer curve. You know, I had some flyers in blue and that sort of thing. So anyways, I was like, I started out 2-0 and then I promptly went 0-2.
Classic.
Yeah. Anyways. And I think the fourth round I was playing a guy who I ended up losing to. But it was right. I had lost game one. We were in game two. And I had, and I mentioned this to you, is like, I had fought really hard the turn before. Like, I was not, like, I was really giving a lot of effort in this game. Like, the turn before, I had to make, like, a pretty, like, you know, I had to make a very convoluted decision tree sort of, like, path that allowed me to attack for 10 with an Audric.
Yeah.
And my opponent was at 20 and not die on the backswing. Wow. He had a ton of creatures in play. So I was like, okay, I had to do all these convoluted things. But I got to swing for 10 and leave back some blockers. And I passed to my opponent, who I mentioned I was already, like, I don't know. It was late in the day. I was, like, being kind of testy, I think. Anyways. And my opponent had the creature that we had mentioned that for 3 you can activate it and you look at the top 3 cards and you put a creature in your hand. So I knew that he had a Flameblade Angel in his hand, which is the one that's 4/4 flyer. Every time a permanent that your opponent controls deals damage to you or a creature you control, Flameblade Angel deals 1 damage to that opponent.
Sure.
Anyways, okay, so that's the only flyer that my opponent has, but it's not in play. My opponent goes, move to combat, never mind. But in between that, and like,
let's reenact it. I'm gonna guess how you did it. You tell me if this is right.
Okay. Move to combat.
Okay.
Never mind.
Was it that long? Was it that long?
Close.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was, and then plays his Flameblade Angel pre-combat.
Yeah.
Like, goes back and plays it.
And then he's
it.
Like, okay.
And I was just like, I, like, sat there for a minute. I was like, I don't know. Do I want to be this jerk? And I hadn't done, like, the math or anything at that point. And he had, like, the card in play that lets you tap your creatures for any color of mana and cards in hand.
Yeah.
So he could have easily still had, like, a removal spell or something. And I was like, okay, so I call a judge over, and initially the judge agrees with my opponent because my opponent is like, I didn't pause. I said it all as one sentence and I didn't touch creatures, which I actually don't remember if that part was true. Like, I think that he did.
Well, like, who knows? Like, who knows? We're
exactly.
speaking when we're,
exactly.
one sentence stops and another, I don't say
no,
period.
No, and I'm also talking specifically about, like, I think that he touched his creatures between saying,
oh, touched his creatures.
Go to combat and never mind. Like, he didn't turn any of them or anything, but he, like, touched them. Anyways, and I was like, at first he agreed with my opponent. He's like, you know, like, if he didn't do anything and if he said in one sentence, then, like, that's totally fine. He can rewind. And I was like, okay, but, like, what if I said okay?
Yeah.
And the judge was still like, oh, man, I don't know.
The judge
and then, like, this, like, onlooker was like, that's not how that works. Like, he can't undo that. And I was just like, do you know what? Fine, whatever. It's rewound. Like, we'll count it as it rewound. My opponent attacked me. I didn't make any blocks, and I swung back for lethal. Because he didn't have a removal spell. So, right, like, it turned out okay.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, it came down to this whole sort of breakdown of, okay, like, at what point could my opponent take back what he was saying at a competitive REL?
Yeah.
And at what point, like, does me saying okay, like, what influence does that have on the situation?
So I think the answer to this question is incredibly difficult because...
It really is. And a lot of people have actually different opinions.
Different
and
opinions.
Judges have I different opinions
judges
on
have
this.
Different
We've
opinions
gotten
as well.
Some different opinions about it.
And judges have an extremely hard job in magic. I mean, the work they do is incredible and the decisions they have to make are very difficult. Mm-hmm. And this is an example of how this is difficult, right? Because not only did they not witness the event, so they have to take the word of both of the players, but when something as convoluted as this, where it's like, yes, rewinding the action is very easy, and sometimes judges will default to that. Like, can I go back to the to the game gate state?
Yes.
To where everybody agrees that it should be.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, then let's do that. And others will default to say, hey, if you said the words, quote unquote, move to combat, that's fine. Or if your opponent acknowledged the fact that you said move to combat, therefore passing priority back.
Yeah.
So I'm not a judge. Like, I honestly don't know what the legal ruling of this is. Maybe we'll find out over the course of the episode. But I think a number of judges could take it in a number of different ways.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Yeah.
And that a different head judges would say different things about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's a couple ways to look at it. Like, some people, so we put this on Twitter and a lot of people replied. So some people were like, it's essentially like F2ing in Magic Online. Like, you can't...
You can't un-F2.
No, you really can't, unfortunately.
Sadly.
And other people were like, once the fact that I said okay makes a big difference because that is giving my opponent information. And that's kind of the biggest part of that.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It's not that necessarily we had like... Some people are like, if he said it all in one sentence, sure. You know, like, I haven't given away any information. Nothing, like, there has been no exchange of information in the situation yet. But as soon as I say okay, my opponent knows I'm not going to, like, tap something down. I'm not going to unsummon something.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, like, I don't have a before, like, an immediately before combat or before attacks effect. And that could make a big difference in the type of decision that he's going
to
make.
You know, if I have to give my opinion here, which I will, I would side with the person who said okay, because in my head, if I'm putting myself in his shoes, and let me say, I feel for this opponent, because how many times have I go to combat and been like, fuck!
Shit. Yes.
1,000
Yeah.
is the answer.
Yeah.
So, like, I get it. I get it. But if somebody called me out on it and said, no, you said move to combat, I would say, you're right.
Agreed.
I did say
and
it.
And I mean, like, right, like, that gets into a whole messy area of, like, holding people to the standards to which we hold ourselves.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, And I do agree with that, because I have done that in the past, and I've done both sides of it. I've said okay when I didn't mean to say okay.
Oh, yeah,
and
me
I was
too.
Just like,
wait, no, it's going to tap you.
Yeah.
Anyway. No, yeah, totally. And this is just one, like, very complicated decision when we're talking about communication.
Yeah.
So how can we avoid things like this? We can be better communicators in magic on both sides of the bench.
And I think, go ahead.
Oh, just, you know, like, I was just going to give some tips of, like, ways that I think that I've learned to be a better communicator.
By all means.
Okay.
Maria, how do you think you've learned to be a better communicator?
I send my opponent a nice piece of stamped mail sprayed with a little of my perfume before the match.
Gross and weirdly personal.
I actually, so this is something to, like, get in a good habit of, right?
Yes.
And that is passing priority. Like, if there's something happening, like, if I play a creature, I kind of look at my opponent, like, to see if they have a response.
Yep.
Like, kind of leave it out there as if it's on the stack. Yeah.
Like, and I even say the name of the creature at this point.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You say, you know, Geralf's masterpiece.
And it's like, that is, right, that's the point at which your opponent could be like, you know, in response.
Yep.
Or play a counterspell on it. I feel like that's a good verbal way to let your opponent, like, have the, or, like, know that now is the time, right? Because then you're also going to avoid confusion. Like, what if you don't say it verbally, you just put down a creature and then you put down another creature?
Oh, God.
And your opponent's like,
no,
wait,
I was gonna counter it.
Wait, I want, like, I had a response to that first creature. Then it's like, okay.
Exactly.
But if you say it out loud and your opponent says nothing, then it's like, okay, like, then we're moving on.
I often say, we'll say forest, mountain, plain. Some people say land for turn.
Yeah.
Just like being very specific with everything that they play. And I think that's great.
So, and I think the nice thing also about saying stuff like that out loud, like lands you can't respond to.
Right.
But like saying it out loud, like Geralf's masterpiece, your opponent, it's like, it's also being like, this is where you say something like, okay or
sure.
like, nope. wait, or no. It's very much like cueing to your opponent, I expect something from you here, even if it's just like a nod. If you don't like talking, I totally get it. You can nod at me.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be like, he nodded when I said it.
Yeah. And sometimes you do that if there's a language barrier too.
Yeah. Nodding. Exactly.
pointing to cards. I've seen that happen as well. I like to make sure we know when the turn is passed.
Yes.
I think that's very important. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Say, go ahead is usually what I say, which I found out recently sounds a little colder than I than I mean it to say. And so I've kind of been debating if I should switch it to past turn.
Wait, what do you say?
Go ahead.
Oh.
Or go. Or whatever.
Go doesn't sound cold.
Okay. I was worried that I was being a little too...
I mean, unless you were saying it like, go.
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 I don't know how I was saying it. A lot of people say past turn.
Go.
Or, you know, your turn, whatever. That's really important because you super don't want to be doing something that's still your opponent's turn when you can't.
Absolutely.
A lot of people say draw for turn before they draw
in
case somebody has some kind of like upkeep trigger on you. I announce my triggers as well. So I'll say trigger when something triggers and go ahead.
Yep. I also, one thing that people don't always say, and like if it comes up, you're kind of in, so you're usually in hot water anyways, but like clean up when you have to discard to hand size.
Yeah.
Or say like discard to hand size or clean up, because that is important for your opponent to know.
Yeah. Also. I will say like, no, I got eight cards or something like
that. Exactly. And that also means that it's like, you are like moving past your end step.
Right.
So that is also important information to know. And I think that that's one that, again, because it doesn't come up that often, people will sometimes just be like, I have eight cards. Like, they won't say it, but they'll just be like, I have eight cards, and they'll put one in the graveyard. And it's like, well, you should let us know what's happening, because that is a very important thing that's happening in the game.
I think if we had to rank them, the top things to say, I would say are announce your creatures or your spells or whatever you're playing, the names
of them. Okay.
I would announce life
would
totals
before that. I would say before that, life totals
is number one for sure.
Yeah, because that's just like, you talk about something that's just like messy to have to navigate.
Oh boy,
you do not
want to go back.
And it's like, do it for you and for your opponent.
Yep, I always say them every single time a life total changes. I say mine and my opponent's. And if my opponent isn't keeping track of life totals, sometimes if I'm at like a higher level event, I'll be like, would you please also keep track of life totals? And I think that's totally, you should do it, because if they call...
They're required to.
Oh boy. Are they really?
They are legally required to.
Oh, okay. Well, good thing I tell them to do it then.
which, I mean, like, again, like at FNM, you know, people have dice or whatever, and you're like, okay, whatever. But if you're playing at a competitive RAL.
Yeah, correct.
It's expected that you're both keeping track and not just one person.
So, like, life totals, names of things that are entering the battlefield at any time, passing the turn.
Beginning of combat phase.
Oh, yes, that was my other big one. Beginning of combat. So, move to combat is a fantastic way to say it. We've talked on the show before about other ways to say begin combat or whatever, but I think just say move to combat is the actual best way you can say that.
Yeah, agreed.
Just because so there's no confusion.
Different from your attack step.
Yes.
Like, beginning of combat is a different part of your turn than attack.
Yep.
And that's, like, that is super important to know.
Yeah, and that's a tricky thing for newer players.
And also...
Beginning combat, attacking, two different steps.
Interestingly, so if, if it's your turn, and you... This was super important when there was a card like Goblin Rabble Master in play.
Yeah.
That said, at the beginning of combat, put a 1/1 goblin into play.
Put a goblin.
Goblin Rabble Master, beginning of combat, put a goblin.
Sounds like we made that card.
Anyways... if it's your turn, you're the one with the Goblin Rabble Master, and you're like, move to combat.
Yeah.
Your opponent can say no, because they have priority at the end, like in your main phase also. Like, you passed in your main phase, but they also get to do something before you move to begin combat. And with Goblin Rabble Master, that was super relevant, because killing Goblin Rabble Master at the end of your main phase versus at beginning of combat.
Oh, yes.
That's a 1/1 goblin's worth of difference. Which is how I'm going to indicate all types of difference in the future. Oh, that's a 1/1 goblin's worth of difference.
Yeah, so, you know, complicated. Let's be clear, everybody. Yeah,
absolutely. I also found, like, so this was, that was in round four, but in round one, I was playing someone who just seemed very flustered in general. And I was, of the two of us, I was definitely the one keeping track of the game state. And it also just, like, makes you a better player.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I felt in that game, I was just sort of, like, not just because my opponent was flustered, but because I was the person who was on top of, like, what was entering the battlefield or leaving the battlefield, what permanence everyone controlled, like, where we were in the parts of the turn.
Yeah.
Was something that I was consciously keeping track of, and it made me, you know, be more aware of my decisions.
I think that's my number one thing that I've been working on with Magic is knowing my board state, mm-hmm. knowing the state of the game. And it's something that I've mentioned that when I'm watching over people's shoulders at Pro Tours is kind of the biggest sort of takeaway that I've noticed.
Yeah.
Especially when I watch LSV. Well, I mean, what a surprise. One of the greatest players to ever play the game.
He can't be doing anything right.
But, like, he has such a knowledge of everything on the board and what everything can do at any given time. And he doesn't even have to think about it. It's just like, shh. It's
all there.
Do you
see his brain working?
I mean, that's
the back of his head clear?
It's not, I don't even see it working. It's just like, he just sees, like, all the moving pieces, like, like little clockworks on the battlefield, and he just knows
he
it
is
intrinsically.
God.
Yeah, that's basically
and
what
the,
I'm saying.
And the battlefield is Earth. And he's on day seven, and he's just like, I'm watching you, motherfucker.
I mean, it was just like, I was just standing back there, and it's just like, he knows, and he knew his opponents, too. Like, don't you want to do this? I'm referring to a match he played against Paul Cheon, his good friend, which was when he was, like, also keeping track
that's
of Paul's.
Also trolling, though.
I mean,
that
yes.
was partial trolling.
He was partial trolling, but, like...
So.
Anyway, so that's just
the
something.
Pro Tour, you hope everybody's keeping track of their game state.
It was just like, I just noticed it for some reason. It was more patently obvious to me when I watched
it.
Did
him. You say patently?
Yeah.
Patently?
Patently.
It's
patent leather?
Definitely not patently.
All right.
Archipelago.
Archipelago. Oh, callback. So we just checked with our judge consortium.
It really was.
We have one on speed dial.
It was several judges.
Several judges weighed in.
Sometimes we text them, judge emergency.
We have a judge emergency.
Yes.
And they said, you know, it's very subjective.
Yeah.
Which I completely agree with.
Which we were already saying.
Yes.
But, yes.
But they kind of had the consensus that 75% of the time you were in combat. You'd be in combat.
Yeah.
So. They would have ruled in Megan's favor. But like they said, who knows what could happen? It's very sort of based on people's opinions. Judge Morgan, who has been on the show before, sort of in the background of a show, thought, you know, made a good point, which was like, it's very easy to sort of abuse that.
Yeah.
You know, if your opponent, which I'm not saying this one did, but like if a nefarious opponent had said move to combat and you didn't say like, and you're like, okay. And they're like, okay, great. They don't have removal.
Yeah.
I mean, wait, hold on. I'm going to play my creature. Devil horns. You know, we want to avoid that in the state of Magic. So that's an interesting point, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was the outcome of our judge consortium. Thank you to them.
Yes. Thank you, judge consortium.
It's nice to have them. The bat signal for the judges. What would the symbol be? Just the planeswalker symbol in the air?
Yes.
That's super sweet.
That would be awesome. Hey, everybody. It is a brand new set, which means that it's time for some Flavor Text Theater movie pictures.
Ooh, I've got a brand new pack here of Shadows of Innistrad. Let's crack it and make some movie pitches based on these card names or concepts to the bigwigs in Hollywood.
Ooh.
Oh, there's flip cards, so I'm like fanning them out. We don't know what they are. Whoa. We know what that one is.
We know what that one is.
Okay.
Ooh, that's all right.
That's a good title.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got one. It's so bad.
Okay.
Okay. It's just really a joke.
Yeah.
So you know that TV show Wings?
Uh-huh.
Back in the day? It's a remake of that, except it's after the nuclear winter, so like the Earth is dead.
Okay.
But the entire cast reunites as ghosts for Ghostly Wings.
Okay.
I watch it.
Mine is based on the... It's a lumberjack. It's a film about lumberjacks.
Sold.
And they're really worried. It's all these lumberjacks.
Lumberjacks. I'm not gonna say it. I'm not gonna say it. Get your mouth in order.
I know. Lumberjacks in one lumberjack camp are so worried that they are that they're losing to a rival like logging company. And they're like, okay, what is the only like what's the answer to all of their like high tech machinery? Like what we do is a craft and we need to be appreciated.
A craft of chopping the shit down of trees.
And they're like, we need to be faster than the logging companies that use machines.
Oh, this is like a John Henry situation.
Exactly. Thank you. That's the one that I was thinking. I was like, I was going to say Paul Bunyan, but no. So, do you remember the movie Tall Tale?
I love that movie.
We should watch that. Moving on.
Okay.
We really should, though.
Writing it down.
Oh, my goodness.
I really want to. Writing it down.
But so this is a bunch of lumberjacks who decide to take on big lumber by proving that they are just as fast as any logging machine. It is Lightning Axe.
Okay, my movie is a sequel to 101 Dalmatians.
Okay.
Which I'm pretty sure already had a sequel called 102 Dalmatians or something like that. But basically, it's made by Disney, but when Disney's really, like, fallen on hard times and needs to really make a blockbuster. So it's the story of Cruella De Vil after she succeeded in this alternate universe.
Oh,
she has
her
puppy coat.
Oh God,
she's doing great. But here's the thing: that puppy, the ghosts of that puppy coat are still in the coat, and they're like coming for her. They're like,
oh my goodness.
You know what you did, Cruella? You skinned us alive. It's haunted cloak.
Disney taking a dark turn.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to them.
Okay, so this is a horror film.
Ooh.
Where a bunch of archaeologists discover what they think was actually probably the Garden of Eden, and they're just like, "Oh my goodness!"
In Jackson County, Missouri,
this is it. And they're they're exploring, and then all of a sudden they realize that like the garden, once Adam and Eve were expelled, it was just like run over by dark and terrifying like demons and spirits.
I'd watch this. This sounds like some A&E stuff going
on. Like possess these people and terrible. Right, it's a full on horror
dark
movie.
Garden of Eden.
Everyone dies. It is called Foul Orchard.
That's actually pretty good. I would kind of tune in for that. All right, this movie is definitely like, let's see, like this is like the Christian Network.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of what network that is called, but I can't remember because I don't have a TV anymore.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But what happens is they don't have a budget to make their own movies.
Yeah.
They can only re-air other movies that already exist.
Okay.
And the problem is they've got like a pile of like movies like that just have rampant swearing and are very dirty. But every time something like terrible is said or, you know, some kind of act is done that they cannot show on their network, they have like somebody come out in a dinosaur costume and be like, nope, kids, or something like that. Anyway, it's called True Faith Censor.
That is amazing.
It's more of a network idea concept than a movie.
Okay, this is a show about a woman in a well, we're gonna say it's contemporary. It's a television show.
Okay,
and it's about she's not Amish, but it's like some sort of like right. They're doing like some sort of like parallel. She grows up in like a very very traditional, very like not about progress, about keeping things the way they are, and very religious community.
Yeah.
But in this community, there's one person. The way that they keep everybody else like pure is by taking all of like their ill will and their ill feelings and their like everything
eels.
Bad, all of their eels, and they put they like channel them into one person.
Oh my
god!
Who
is the person who has to hold on to everyone else's terrible feelings?
This is like The Giver, sort of.
Yeah, it's kind of like The Giver, except it's not all memories. It's just everybody's bad impulses and evil feelings.
This is actually a movie.
It's called Vessel of Malignity.
This is actually a movie. First of all, the title of this movie is terrible, but this is like that's a movie.
Okay.
Like, I love post-apocalyptic movies and, like, where it's weird future societies.
Okay, so this could be future society?
Yes.
I was thinking it's more like one of those ones that it's, like, super
like
rural.
Amish. I mean,
exactly.
It could be. It could go either way.
Like how X-Files did that one that's considered to be, like, their scariest one about the super incestuous family.
Home.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it the scariest episode, but I would call it pee gross.
Yeah, fair enough.
Pee gross. I don't even know what that word means. I can't make a joke about it.
I don't have a pitch for this. I'm just going to give you what they're going to say.
Okay, what?
At the end of the trailer. Nicolas Cage is uncaged fury.
None of these are really, like, inspiring me here.
Well, we got some good ones.
We got some good ones out of there. I personally am really excited for that spooky tale of all the bad stuff going into one person. And then that person, like, is, like, so, you know, caged somewhere or kept in a pit. And then they get out and things get really
bad. Or I wasn't thinking that she, like, I didn't, in my mind, one, of course, it was a woman. Classic scapegoat situation.
Oh, okay.
And two, like, she's not, like, kept anywhere or anything. Like, she just, like, lives amongst them and is considered to be, by some, like, she can make a lot of, like, decisions because she's more worldly than everybody else because she knows all this stuff.
Yeah.
But at some point, dark shit starts happening for sure.
Oh, that's cool. All right, this is kind of a very short film. It's a follow-up to Highlander, but it's not one of those abominations that are supposedly Highlander movies.
Okay.
But in this case, so, you know, he's got it. He's got the knowledge and the power, and somebody's coming to take it.
Yeah.
And it's a pair of twins, and they're fancy Frenchmen, and they duel him for it at the same time. Voldaren duelist. See, it's a double meaning.
Yeah.
Duel.
Okay, wait. I have one.
Okay.
This is a girl in, like, Dickensian times.
Okay.
And she is she has to have, like, you know, like, a skill because her family is very poor. So they she tries to go to and work in a lace factory where she's knitting lace all day.
Okay.
But it turns out that she's terrible at it, and she just keeps messing up all of this lace. And it actually turns into a lighthearted comedy, since all my other ones were so dark. It's all of these mishaps that she gets into because she is terrible at making lace. It's called Stitched Mangler.
I'm gonna pass on that one.
Come on, you don't want to see Stitched Mangler? What's wrong with you?
Mostly I'm excited for, of my offerings, Ghostly Wings.
Ghostly Wings.
Hey. Everybody, it's our show.
That's right. Thank you for joining us for all this deep talk.
Yeah, we got real deep. We got deep on Standard. Mm-hmm. We got deep on a judge question.
Yeah, man.
We got real deep on some movie pitches.
We had some real discussion.
Yeah, this was a
debate.
Hashtag real talk.
Hashtag real talk.
Magically amateuring. We don't cut corners.
We don't mess around.
No.
There's one thing we're known for. It's not messing around.
There's two things we're known for. It's messing around.
Are you counting messing around as two words? What are we known for? Two things.
Messing around. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. You can find us online at magicTheAmaturing.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, at Tolarian Community College, where you can watch a suite of other hilarious and or informative videos by the professor and other esteemed colleagues of ours at the college. You can contact us at magictheamaturing@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook /magictheamaturing or MTAcast?
MTAcast.
/MTAcast, or on Twitter @MTAcast. Online, I am Ice Cream Socialist.
I'm horny_unicorny. I just wanted to tell everybody one thing, which you've probably already heard if you have followed
this is great news.
Yeah, the internet at all.
If you follow the internet.
If you're on Twitter, and which you should be if you're a Magic player, if Twitter is where we hang out. Really exciting news from Nate Holt, our good friend and host of Walking the Plains. A new documentary that he's worked on called Enter the Battlefield is premiering live very, very soon. It's going to it's following the lives of pro Magic players.
Yes, it is a full-length documentary.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
About Magic the Gathering. And it is going to be super sweet. It's going to be available on YouTube, on Netflix, and when it first comes out, they're going to stream it for a 12-hour marathon on Twitch.
On April 25th.
There you go.
So it'll be on YouTube on the 26th of April, and then Netflix in certain areas also available on the 26th. This is really exciting because producing a full-length, feature-length documentary is, first of all, insane.
Incredible.
Like, takes so much work.
Years. They've literally been working on this for years.
And they put a trailer out, which is very good. We retweeted it. So check out our tweets and you can find it. You see behind the scenes, there's an interview with Owen Turtenwald and his mom. Aww. His mom's in the trailer. Melissa DeTora, friend of the show, is in the trailer. I mean, it's just going to be a really interesting look into pro players and their lives on the Pro Tour, which, I mean, is so fascinating. So
absolutely.
Oh, I'm so excited to watch it. Of course, I'm going to mention again, Patreon. Head over there, patreon.com/mtacast, and join our lovely patron family. We would love to have you. And, of course, our shirts and playmats available on Magic the Amateuring.
The Magic the Amateuring website. Peace out, motherfuckers.
Peas out.
Peas out.
Rock out with your peas out.
What? Not a saying.
For vegetarians, it is.